So, last talk for today, a journey towards Kubernetes. I have two questions at the beginning, and that determines how fast I speak at which part of the talk. So first of all, who of you has already built a Docker image once in their life? That's actually a lot, but no, that's actually all. Okay, well, we just gained a minute. And second question, who of you has ever used Kubernetes in his life? That's a lot less. Okay, great. So then we can go over the first part really quickly. So a long time ago, people were basically running everything on hardware, and that sucked. So they invented virtual machines, and virtual machines also sucked because the virtual machines are big, virtual machines are difficult to handle, and virtual machines come with a lot of dependencies in the operating system, potentially, depending on what you use exactly. So around 2013, people started using containers, and I remember in 2013 and 2015, people were complaining, well, containers are bad, containers are stupid, containers are not secure, and by now containers are everywhere. So clearly they were not stupid. VM images, like I said, there are a lot of problems with that. First of all, VM images are big because they have a whole operating system, obviously. Second of all, building these VM images can be quite complicated. So it used to be actually pretty common to build VM images and then distribute these images as sort of applications to your end customers in the corporate world. They come with significant overhead. And finally, running a VM image can be quite challenging depending on the details of the VM image. So if you ever tried to export a VM snapshot in CarVM and then run it on another host, it might not work because it depends on certain CPU capabilities that your other system just might not have. And obviously, Docker solves a lot of these problems. First of all, the Docker engine runs the application isolated or with C groups, if you know what that is. And the Docker file defines a standardized VM image or Docker image with a special syntax that you can then pull, configure, and run with the Docker client. So that's great. You all said you know how to build a Docker image, so I don't need to explain this. We have a Docker file, we have our files from our application, and we build a Docker image. You all said you know how that works, so don't complain now. So then if you run the Docker image, obviously that's how you do it. You do it by giving the container a name, you map the port out, you do an environment, and you declare which image you are going to use. That's great, that works, obviously. But the moment you have more than one application, you can't really use these commands anymore. This gets really complicated. You can't manage that. You can't do configuration management with that. So what do? Well, there's something called Docker Compose. And Docker Compose essentially defines a configuration file, a YAML file, or like it's kind of like a JSON file, but a bit more readable for humans. And as you can see, all of these things from the Docker command map into this file. We got the container up there, we got the image up there, we got the environment down here, we got the port here, and we got the volume here. And if you want to, we can also define a network. That's also great, but now we have an additional problem because this is a Flask application, so it's a web server, and most web servers are not especially useful without actually being exposed to the World Wide Web. And the moment you expose something to the World Wide Web in the year 2026, then you should probably have encryption. Well, now we have encryption, but the problem is to do encryption, we usually need additional software. So we need a reverse proxy, and we need a software that actually gets a certificate for us. So essentially, if we do that the most simple way, we are going to have an Nginx reverse proxy, which does the SSL configuration, and we have a Let's Encrypt certbot, or just certbot using Let's Encrypt, to actually get the certificate. That works. You can do that if you have one application, maybe if you have a few applications, but it gets complicated really quickly the moment you have multiple domains, multiple SSL certificates, and also the moment management says they'd like a few features. So, what were the features management wanted? Well, how about we use multiple nodes or multiple machines to actually run all of our images, because we have a lot of load, we need to distribute our CPU load over multiple machines. We want to have basically our application running on 20 servers. Second of all, the moment we have our application running on multiple servers, we probably want to have encrypted traffic between those nodes. So how are we doing that? Well, I mean, we could set up a VPN, we could set up a PSEC if we hate ourselves, but that's going to be quite difficult. And finally, I mean, if you're already defining like a cluster, we have different services and we have something there, something here, how about we just have an HTTP RP for all of the objects that are now residing in our cluster that we can query or that we can even post new objects to? That would be great, right? And finally, we'd like to have easy TLS management. How we do that with that? Well, not at all. If you have Docker Compose, none of these things are going to happen. That's the simple answer. But if we duplicate this service here now and think about what of this we actually have duplicated. So as you can see, the environment might be the same for all of our application. The volume configuration is the same. Our whole reverse proxy here is the same for all of our services. And our certificate is the same for all of our reverse proxies as well. So how about we just pull out the certificate definition? We say we have a certbot, and that certbot somehow needs to exist for the entire cluster. So we have some kind of object now that we want to define via an HTTP RP, via a readable format, for example, YAML, maybe also JSON, nobody cares. And we want to do, we want to have it. So this thing up here, whoops, my bad. This here creates all of our certificates. Oh, that would be great. So next thing, obviously, like I said, the reverse proxy is the same for everybody as well, so for every application. So let's pull that out as well. And then we see we have our definition down here. So usually if we use Nginx for certificate management and also for SSL, we need some sort of configuration for Nginx. And if we want to have clear YAML defined object that we might want to post to a HTTP RP, and maybe that's also a REST RP, so it has predefined types, then we can't have this down here. We can't have an arbitrary Nginx configuration. We actually can have that in Kubernetes, but we're not doing that. Okay. That'd be stupid. So how about this? We say that up here, this environment for the certbot is only the thing that is relevant for all certificates. For example, your email address, if you want to let's encrypt your email. And down here, we actually say that since this is now our ingress, this is our reverse proxy, this thing knows which domains it needs. So which domains it needs a TLS certificate for, we just define this is this TLS hostname, the target is the app, and we have a cluster issuer called Let's Encrypt, so it somehow interacts with this thing up here. Then over here, we already saw the configuration for both applications the same, so let's pull that out. And we see the volumes are the same for both, let's pull that out. And finally, we give all of these things name. We call that up here a cluster issue. We call that an ingress. We call this a deployment. The Docker container that are running within this deployment, we call pods. Then this over here becomes a persistent volume. And this is called a config map. And you already invented Kubernetes. Great. Actually, there is one more thing in the middle that's called a service, which connects an ingress to a deployment. You will have to define that. That doesn't really have an equivalent in Docker or Docker Compose, but it's not that hard to understand. I could show you the syntax, but I don't really want to dwell on the syntax too much because, frankly, the Kubernetes syntax is very verbose. So usually, you want to do that with an IDE and let your IDE at least partially create your syntax because you don't want to write it all yourself. I will put up the syntax up here. I don't really want to talk too much about it. Like I said, we have down here, we have the list of environment variables. We see here, we have a few target ports, but the most interesting thing about the whole thing is a few new variables we now have. And one of these variables is the replica count. That is one of the great features of Kubernetes. We can just add a field called replicas, and then we can increment that field to an arbitrary large number, depending on how large our entire cluster is. And this will cause our application to be scaled indefinitely within the cluster. If you put 100 there and our cluster is big enough, then we will 100 deployments of our applications automatically, and we don't need to do anything. And secondly, over here, like I said, we talked about this certificate management is hard sometimes, but with Kubernetes, it is not. There's only two things you need to define in a Kubernetes to make TLS certificates work. First of all, you need to define who's issuing your certificates. Usually, that's going to be Let's Encrypt. And secondly, you need to define what hosts you want to have it for. And as you can see, these hosts are defined for the ingress. So you can have an indefinite amount of ingresses for an indefinite number of domains, or you can have one ingress for all of your domains, and certificates will automatically be created for all domains you need. Okay, so if that is all so great, then why is there sometimes such a negative attitude towards Kubernetes? Like in 2013, when I talked to people, people told me, well, Docker is shit. That might be true. I don't know. I don't think it is, because by now Docker is everywhere. But now I hear the same things about Kubernetes. And I think part of the reason is because people don't really understand what Kubernetes is good for and what it is not necessarily good for, and why. Okay, let's just talk about it. Kubernetes is great at scaling stateless. And stateless is an important word here, loads. That means it scales things that do not have a state. If your application writes something on disk, or even worse, if two of your applications depend on a shared disk state, then it is not stateless. And I do not comprehend how so many people don't understand what stateless means. It's crazy. Second of all, Kubernetes is great at handling certificates. So if your main concern is that you can't handle all of your certificates and certificate handling becomes so difficult, then Kubernetes will just automatically solve all of your problems. Then it has great UIs for semi-technical users. So there is a UI called Ranger, but there's also like OpenShift and obviously the IVS and Google Cloud interfaces. And those provide interfaces to the Kubernetes objects we already created. So we have an ingress, we have a deployment with our containers. And if somebody comes along, doesn't understand anything about containers or about Kubernetes, he doesn't need to. He can just go into the web UI, he's going to see the deployment. And if it doesn't work, he can just click it and say redeploy, and it's going to work. Next thing. It automatically encrypts internal traffic between nodes. So we talked about if we have our application shared over multiple nodes, or maybe the ingress is on a different node as the actual applications, then the internal traffic needs to be encrypted somehow. And encrypting traffic with IPsec is hard. At least I think it's hard. I don't know if any of you ever tried it. So Kubernetes handles that automatically. There are different plugins for doing that, but the default way is essentially it just uses WireGuard. And finally, it has some very good integrations for so-called GitOps. That means all of our objects now are basically YAML objects, or if it's better for you to understand, JSON objects that you send to an API. And usually in how these deployments work is you have a Git repository with all of your objects, and you have your cluster, and the cluster just queries the Git repositories and looks for changes in the Git repository. And whenever there's a change, it's going to deploy the new version into your cluster automatically, hopefully into your non-production cluster first. The problems with Kubernetes that usually cause the projects to fail, if there are some clueless management that just heard the word somewhere and wants to implement it, is that maintaining Kubernetes as a cluster for a single person is very hard. So it's a lot of work to maintain a Kubernetes cluster. I have a Kubernetes cluster with only 3 nodes, and it still breaks from time to time for various, very complicated reasons, and I spend an entire day fixing it. And I've seen companies that have a team of 2 people for a Kubernetes of 1,000 server, and that's just not going to work. So if you want to implement Kubernetes, you either need to pay for it from a cloud provider, or you need to have enough people managing it locally. And that leads to the second problem. Buying Kubernetes from a cloud provider is very expensive, so you don't really want to do it. And finally, Kubernetes does not magically make your application highly available. It makes a stateless application highly available. It makes an application that has just one state in a database, or just has one dependency on a database, and is thread safe in interacting with that database, automatically highly available. But if your application sucks, if your application has disk states, if it has strange interactions that it needs to coordinate, like Grafana needing to coordinate their alerts, then it does not become highly available automatically. And you should not use Kubernetes because you think it will make your application highly available. And if you remember this last thing here, you're going to know more about Kubernetes that most people I've worked with in my professional life. I actually forgot about this one. Kubernetes may redeploy your container at any point for any reason, so do not think you can change something in the container and it will be persistent. It may be there for a week, it may be there for a day, it may be there for a year, but at some point the container will redeploy for whatever reason, and all of your changes are going to be lost. Okay, if somebody wants to use Kubernetes, setting up a Kubernetes, like I said, is pretty hard, but there are also pretty easy solutions with a single node Kubernetes. And I have a repository here, which is called Atlantis Fleet Ops, which is a GitOps repository, so it automatically deploys into a Kubernetes, but it contains some simple applications, which just consist of a deployment, an ingress, a service, and a config map that you can take as a base for deploying your own application. Okay. Questions? So let me look at the time first. Oh, it didn't start it. Well, I don't know. I think my main problem with 10 minutes here is that I cannot speak as fast in English as I can in German.
Yes, no, I'm not sure that I understand everything correctly, but when I have multiple servers, I use Ansible or something like this. Do I still need to use it if it's Kubernetes, or is it somehow proxy away?
You should probably not use Ansible for Kubernetes. Kubernetes relies on YAML objects like the ones we showed here. And you can apply these YAML objects. Theoretically, you can apply this YAML object with Ansible. So there is, you could do that, but I don't know why you would. Because the main integration that Kubernetes has, like I said, is GitOps. This means you push all of your objects into a Git repository, and you just link this Git repository into Kubernetes, and then Kubernetes will just pull the changes. But yeah, I suppose you could also run it in Ansible. You could also just execute kubectl on your local console to push these objects. Or you could use curl to push the objects to the HTTP RP. But I don't think that's a good idea.
I don't know if you know about Dark Swarm. How would you communicate Dark Swarm from Kubernetes?
It's a dead project. I don't know. Like, Docker Swarm is. The thing is, I haven't used Docker Swarm in a long time. Actually, I think the last time was in 2018 when I was still working in Pforzheim. And yeah, I mean, it's basically Docker Compose with a few extra features. I don't really know if it still exists, honestly. I have not seen Docker Compose in 5 years. That's my honest answer. I do not know a single company that uses it.